chapter 4. I don't know. We have left the discussion of idols. I don't know necessarily where we're going, but I do know what we're going to do for a moment or two here. Next couple of weeks, we'll just do randoms, but I will be better prepared. This is when the elders get nervous when I don't do the series. I sometimes ramble, but I've got a sort of a focus here for you. I have a story to tell you, and I have some absolute free advertisement for Square 40. Now, I don't know if you ever eat Square 40. I'm not here to really champion Square 40 in any form or fashion. But here lately, the local older redneck men that eat there every morning have started carrying fresh blueberries. And they're making their pancakes with them fresh blueberries. And you don't have to trust me. They are delicious. And if you have time to make it to Square 40 in the morning to eat breakfast, you go ahead. And you may say, well, why does our preacher have time? Well, I have three different children in three different schools, and so my day consists a lot of Ubering children around. And, you know, it's been a little bit of emotion this week. I dropped Macy off for her first day of high school. Yes. Go ahead, Jeff.
Are you telling us now that you work for Uber also?
Yes, I do work for Uber. I have numerous jobs. It's a free Uber job, though. I don't get paid in any form or fashion. But so Charlie has sort of been off my radar for a couple of years because once Macy moved to E.O. Kaufman, I was completely dedicated to her, to one child for so long. And Anne-Marie just took care of everything at Etheridge because she dropped the boys off, picked them up, and did all that. So it's been a while. So Charlie's not had any of his daddy's experiences in the morning. And that didn't hit me until yesterday after I picked him up. And I thought, I'm going to get him in the morning. So I don't know if you know anything about E.O. Kaufman drop-off or not, but you drop him off at the back of the school, and from my vehicle to the door where he enters to go to school is about 40 yards, okay? And so I let him get about halfway, and you can imagine right 5-10 minutes before 8 o'clock, every kid in the world is getting out of their car and doing the best to make it to that door and not be late. And there's a couple teachers out there that's supervising. I let him get about halfway today, and I rolled my window down and went, hey! And he turns around, of course, every kid and every teacher stops, turns on one. Please find a pretty girl and kiss her. Let's just be honest, you're not making it through high school. And I just left, right? And he's traumatized. And I thought, that'd be good for him. That'd be good for him. Shame on me. Well, I'm trying to make my boy tough. Wait, everybody, hunt for cover. Did y'all hear that? Cover time. Anyway, okay, so I was a little mean to Charlie this morning. I sent it to my mom and she preached to me for 30 minutes. But like I said, Charlie, it won't take long. He'll get used to me again. That stuff doesn't bother him. He'll be all right. I think E.O. Kaufman's going to be great for him. So what we're going to do. Yes, Macy is in high school. So I wasn't going to tell you that, but I let Macy out this morning. And she knows, right? And Macy has never been embarrassed to me. I mean, it's gotten to that point. We were at a camp, and Chuck Morris calls, is Ben McAnally's daughter? And he thought he was going to embarrass her. She just strolled down there like, what you got? Ain't nothing you got. But high school's sort of a different bird because she cares now, you know, like what people think or whatever. So, but it's still very difficult. But I did roll the window down and just start screaming, ah! She's just running. Of course, the SRO officer, he's the only one that doesn't change, I guess, in the county. And he already knows who I am. Michelle Manning was standing out there last year, and I did that. And he leaned in and said, is he special? Is he? And I, oh, yeah, he's definitely special. She walked, that won't be seen. Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to get my kids to be embarrassed to me for a long time. I get that. It is what it is. So what we're going to talk about is how can I be different? And this is a discussion we could have at any age level. I mean, we could talk to our kids about this, being a Christian, how to be different and all this. But I wanted to show you a unique, I would say, pericope of Scripture that really deals with how to be unique and how to be different as God's child. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start out by reading Ephesians 4:29-32. 29 through 32. So 29 through the end of the chapter. Ephesians chapter 4. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, among with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Now, if you will run back your mind a little bit, we talked about this in a Sunday morning class, if you were a part of that, maybe a month and a half ago. And so I don't want to go into depth into all of that stuff I talked about here. The not grieving the Holy Spirit, we could have an entire class on that. The one thing I pointed to that I definitely want you to pay attention to also here is what unwholesome talk is. Even though we don't necessarily have it defined for us what unwholesome talk is here, by implication, we can understand that what happens next, and we have Miss Dolly in here, and I'm always glad when we come to something like this. It says, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but. And we know that the but negates everything before this, and what comes after it is the purpose or the reasoning of all this. Only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So what we can conclude from this sentence is that unwholesome talk is when we use our words to tear other people down. It is not what we call cuss words in our society. Now, I could go into this for hours on end, but cuss words are not something that I want you to leave here and start using, okay? Well, a preacher said that ain't unwholesome talk, because the world looks at that in a way that's not good, okay? And I'm not telling you that everything the world looks at that's not good makes it not good. I'm just telling you that for us and our power and our influence, to the best of our ability, we want to be a very powerful influence in the community. And if I went out as a minister and ate blueberry pancakes at Square 40 and said every cuss word in the book, then my influence would be tainted. Whether I like that to be true or not, it would be true. Does everyone understand that? And I've told you the history of cuss words, right? Everyone has heard me do that before. Yes? No? Do you want to hear it again? I can go fast. Surely y'all have heard me do this enough. Okay, I will go fast. The history of our four-letter language. Most of the four-letter words that we use that we call cuss words come from the Anglo-Saxons language. They were in a caste system, C-A-S-T-E. And they were the serfs. That is the lowest ring on the totem pole. And so the Anglo-Saxons' parents would carry their children to work with them some days. The Anglo-Saxons, as serfs or slaves, would have worked for a group on this caste system known more as the bourgeois, or the aristocracy, the wealthy folks. And so those kids would play together. The rich kids and the poor kids would play together all day long. And then that night at the table, the rich kid would say a word that he had heard this poor kid say. And his mother would say to him in Latin, do not use that vulgar language. And the word vulgar in Latin does not mean filthy, nasty, and ugly. It means common. So basically, she would have been telling her child, don't speak like poor people speak. Everybody got that? Good. So then it comes over into our language, and the word vulgar evolves. And so we use the same words as would have been used in this same system. But the word vulgar evolves, not into that of poor people, but vulgar involves something being nasty or dirty. So that's free. Everybody got that? Any questions? Charlie, you got a question? Just thumbs up. All? Okay. Right. I like that. Right. Right. That's good. That's interesting.
Word loses its power.
Right. Well, I told y'all that this was coming, and it's going to come even more. Do y'all remember me talking about the use of what we call profanity or cuss words by politicians? You think back 10 years ago, think about a president saying a curse word. That would have been the most unpresidential thing you could have thought about. However, for some weird reason, the American public, because of the language that Trump used in his candidacy, saw him as being someone who was transparent because of the language he was using. And so if you look back this week, if you've not seen any quotes from the Democrats this week about the atrocities that have gone on in El Paso, almost every one of the presidential candidates in the Democratic Party have used profanity. And again, you think about look, I'm not picking on Democrats here or Republicans. I'm just making a point of why this is taking place, because they've polled the public people, and we think that people that use profanity are transparent. Let that sink in for a while. And so it's going to happen more and more and more. You're going to hear people that ruling our country are going to use this language, because at some point we perceive that as transparency. I don't know if y'all remember me talking about that. It's been a couple of months ago. And I talked about how truly difficult or rare it is to run into an individual that's transparent. And if you do run into someone like that, they immediately make you nervous. If you know someone who's transparent, they make you nervous. But at the same time, it's because it's such a rare thing. It's such a rare thing. Right. Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's definitely a thought. Like it or not, our system is still built where the common man elects the rulers. You know, they can be high and mighty and get all the money they want in the world. It's still the common man that will elect the rulers. Okay, let me move past that. And we'll talk more about unwholesome talk in a minute. So in this passage, it talks about us obviously being different. And I have here the idea of this goes back to an image for Dow Flat for me, but what is the purpose of a mirror? To reflect. How many of you like mirrors? Nobody in here likes mirrors? I just have to go and tell you, be honest. Anna Reed will tell you, do not put me in front of a mirror. And I am not that male that takes a 45-minute shower and combs my hair for 30 minutes. That is not why I like mirrors. I don't know why I like mirrors. I will get in front of a mirror and talk to my wife. And she's out here and like, hello, Anna Reed, how are you doing? And just watch myself talking to my wife. I don't know why I get enjoyment out of that. She will grab me by the arm and pull me out of the bathroom anytime she needs to talk to me. If I'm in front of a mirror, she will not do it, because I'll sit there and watch myself. I am not vain. I want you to know that I have many bad characteristics. Vanity is not one of them. But I really enjoy watching myself in front of a mirror. I don't know why. I think I'm funny. I mean, the thing about Charlie, I sent that to my mother-in-law because I thought that was hilarious. She didn't think it was funny. I mean, I don't know why, because that's funny, right? We have, y'all remember Momo? Do y'all remember Momo and our kids a couple months ago? I mean, it just shut the whole kid YouTube thing down for a while. Well, this week in the Tishomingo County Vidette on the front page, we've got this woman running for county clerk, and she looks just like Momo. I mean, so I sent it to my mom. I said, so Momo's running for county clerk. I thought that was hilarious. Again, my mother didn't think that was funny at all. I mean, you know, so when I get in front of a mirror, I have this huge problem. So I'll be the first to admit in here today that I love mirrors. It's not, again, for vanity reasons. And Charlie, I'm sure, because of all of the hair that he once had, probably doesn't. He's like, shut up, fat guy. Listen, he's funny. He picked on Charlie twice. I got to move forward. Remember, I don't forget. Remember the other day I asked you and Brad to help me out? You don't want to help. I'm kidding. I really don't have a memory. I don't even know how I remember that. But somebody in here does like mirrors, and you're not saying it. But you know what mirror, it has a purpose, and it's to reflect. Here's another thing, that mirrors sometimes scare me. Maybe this is new. Maybe this is just me. Maybe I'm just weird. But have you ever looked into a mirror, like wasn't paying attention, and all of a sudden you caught yourself really looking in the mirror, and like, who is that? Is that me? Is that what I really look like? First, I'm old. I'm white. I'm okay with that. But have y'all done anything like that before? Anybody? I'm all alone here. I'm on an island. I'm very unique. I'm just going to go with I'm normal and you guys are strange. Okay, anyway. The purpose of a mirror is to reflect. And I guess when I think about that, we know as God's child what we are to reflect. I have two questions about that. First, if I were to get you right now, very privately, to get a piece of paper and write down, what is it that you reflect? Just answer it in your mind. You don't have to write it down. What do you reflect? The second of all, if I were to come around the people that are around you all the time, and I were to ask you, what do you reflect? What would you say? While you're thinking about those two things, I have to tell another story. And this story is worthy because it is me getting got. So 2 days ago, I pulled up into Miss Becky Sharp. She's back over in this region. And I asked her if I could swim in her pool. And she's like, well, I'd let you swim, Ben, but I poured a lot of chemicals in there and I don't want your children swimming right now. I was like, okay, so we'll wait till tomorrow. She did not say that at all. She told me she poured a lot of chemicals in there. She'd rather wait till tomorrow. So we waited till the next day. And that was yesterday. So I pull into her driveway and Enos is mowing. He is mowing up a storm and he has just turned right in the mower. And so I've got him. So I pull into Miss Becky's yard. She can't see. She's got those beautiful magnolias. I can get in right quick and get out. So I zip up right next to Enos and he's running and he looks over and near crashes the lawnmower. You know what I'm talking about? It jerks him up. So, and I am laughing so hard and my two boys are laughing. And I pull away all the way up in Miss Becky's parking lot. And I don't know if she was watching or waiting for me or what, but she immediately walks out to her door and goes, Ben! And I'll get out like, what, Miss Becky? She goes, you just run up on everybody's brand new carpet? And sure enough, there was a ginormous piece of carpet in her driveway and I had pulled my truck right on top of it. And I am just beside myself. I mean, oh, Miss Becky, I am so sorry. I'll get off of it. She said, no, I was kidding. We had a leak. It got ruined. I just put it out there, thought I'd get you. So don't feel bad for Charlie. Feel bad for me, okay? Okay, feel bad for me. She got me good, very, very good. Let's talk about this again. When we talk about all this unwholesome talk, the thing the Bible does teach us is that we shouldn't talk about what people do and see in private. And it's not just talking about, well, did you hear what Sister So-and-So? We shouldn't always be just talking about ways people are doing sin kind of thing and just how we talk. And I think about also when we talk about other people. No one in this room is above the ability to feel a little bit better about themselves by pushing someone else down. Drug addicts have a statement about this, and that's a man in a ditch can always find someone worse. It's like, well, I may be in a ditch, but at least I got shoes, right? You know what I'm saying? And as an alcoholic, you can understand what they're saying. They, no matter how far down they fall, they always feel better about themselves if they can find someone who's just a little bit worse. So everyone in this room, at some point or another, can feel a little bit better about themselves by finding someone that they can talk negatively about. So let's take this. What if we followed Miss Sandy for an entire day with a recorder, not personally, just a recorder. And then we came in here on Wednesday night, we were just going to listen to the words that she used this day. What would she say? What would we hear? Now, Miss Sandy, don't worry, we're not doing that, and I'm not trying to pick on you, and I'm pretty sure you'd be one of the better ones. Jeff would be the bad one, right? Getting all them people up in Utah and all that kind of stuff. Mormons, yeah, I couldn't think of what they were. Yeah, anyway, but you think about that. And again, one of these questions is about a mirror and about reflection. And the other one is just an honest, bare, open all, this is what I said today. And I know I've gone to this quite a bit, but here in Ephesians, we're talking about being a poema. And later on, Paul talks about us being living epistles. We write a letter every day. So what did you write today? What do you reflect? If you want to be different, then these things are not only questions that we have to ask ourselves. These are things that we have to constantly work on. Constantly work on. When we look here at Ephesians, if we want to know how to beat the things that are listed in Ephesians 31, then all we have to do is put three characteristics in our lives that are listed in Ephesians 32. I shouldn't have picked Miss Sandy. Jeff's back there getting her good. Boy, you'd be in trouble and have to repent 12 times if it had been last Thursday. but yes, if you want to beat all of the bad things that are listed in verse 31, then you have to have three things that are listed in verse 32. And I'm going to go back and read that passage, and we're going to work through these just a moment. Be kind, be compassionate, and forgive each other. Now let those sink in for a minute. Be kind, be compassionate, and forgive each other. So we've had our share of pain and death and suffering in this congregation of late, have we not? And I got to experience David Neal Kerr's family 100% this last couple of days. And there are a couple of things that I definitely want to share about that before I move forward. And the first one is this. I have no right to take any credit for what I'm about to tell you. But as a congregation, every one of you should be immensely proud of Marty Manning. And I know most of you were not there to hear it, but it was beautiful. And I'll start crying if I talk about it too much. But it was just beautiful. First of all, Marty was scared to death. That alone makes me happy, right? Because I know when we get real nervous like that, a lot of times barriers break down that we normally have. Sometimes we say things we wouldn't normally say. And second of all, it's a moment of just raw emotion. And that for me was priceless this past Monday. And I'm telling you, and if you want to know how beautiful, all you got to do is ask somebody that was there. I'm pretty sure Michelle would even tell you that her husband was shining beautifully on that day. The next thing, I guess, that I would talk about is I didn't know Chris, okay? David has three children, and we know two because they attend here with us all the time, but he has a son by the name of Chris, and I did not know him. And so that was an experience. And then understanding that they all live here close together and watching them as a family was beautiful, beautiful. And I didn't know how to say thank you for them allowing me to be a part of their family for the last couple of days. So when we got to the graveside, I cried a little bit, and I just told them, I said, without a doubt for me, the most difficult part of preaching is the fact that you got to leave your family. And I've told y'all this many times, every one of you that leave here and go eat with your families on Sunday, I'm not mad or jealous of you. I just want you to know I know what that feels like. And I know what it is to have that family eating at that table. I know what it's like to have family members that are Republican and family members that are Democrats. I know what it is to have family members that are state fans. They're special needs people, I know. And there's fans that of Ole Miss. I know what it is to come to that table and to be a family with all of this diverse thought, right? And family can get away with things more so than anybody else in your life, can't they? Like, you wouldn't let somebody on the street say something like that to you, but family, sometimes they can say that kind of thing. And when I come to this passage and I learn how I'm going to overcome all of these other things in my life, and I hear the very first two things is be kind and compassionate, I think about family. Family. I just recently, and I'm not going to go into any details, so Pam, don't get nervous, but I recently had a discussion with Pam, and she was talking about her family, and she was talking about this one specific member of her family. And when I hear that, I don't cast judgment, because I just want to grab her and be like, girl, we have all got that family member. Do you know what I'm talking about? You do. Everybody in this room. And the thing about family is, it's not always a fluid thing. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you have that one member that sucks the life out of the entire family for like 40 years. But a lot of times, that situation is ebb and flow. Like sometimes the member needs more, and sometimes they need less. Now, again, and I say this all the time, and it makes people uncomfortable, but every one of us also have that drunk uncle. Everybody in here has that drunk uncle. It's not somebody that you want to go out and parade like, if this is the best representation of the McAnally family, here's my Uncle Arnie. No, I mean, we're not wanting to do that. We're not. And I talk about my Uncle Arnie. I could tell you so many stories. He is now passed. My Uncle Arnie didn't drink a bit of alcohol until he was 50 years old. And then he died a drunk. And he died a drunk. And it kills me. He was my grandfather's best friend. They was buddies for life. They married sisters. He married a woman named Frances James, and Papa married a woman named Hurtling James. And they were first cousins, and they loved each other. And when that happened, it just changed the whole family dynamic. So we've all got that drunk uncle. But in all of that, and I've seen my Papa get so angry at my Uncle Arnie, but I never saw him tell him he wasn't going to help. He loaded him up and drive him home and threatened to kill him if he left his house. He'd go to jail and tell him, I'm not going to pay your way out, but when you get out, I'll be here to take you home. I mean, we've all seen that situation. And so when I come here and I hear this from Ephesians, I think about family. And maybe you don't. Maybe you don't think about that. But I think about if we could treat everyone like we treat our family, it would be different. I had a family member call me tonight just in tears, and I didn't know what to tell him because he has a situation where one of his children is struggling with their sexuality. We won't go any further into that because I'm pretty sure Mildred's going to put this on the line. You know what I'm saying? And I got family that listens every week. And my heart is broken for him, and I don't know what to do or say or you know, there are no words for that situation. But I'll tell you this. I love him, and I love his child. And there's nothing going to change that. And I will do everything I can in my power. Why can we understand that when it comes to something that we had no power over? We didn't get to choose our family. You didn't. You didn't get to choose Jared to be your son. Boy, you wish sometimes. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. Jared's like, yeah, let us pray. We didn't get to choose that. We were born into that, but we are so passionate. Now, I don't know if this is true in northern places. I will tell you that I had a concept of what city people were like, and I was wrong. I thought city folks didn't know nothing about family. That is not true. In Memphis, families are of immense importance. The problem is they're not extended. It's immediate because most of them are transient. Most of them moved there. They weren't raised there. We have people in the room I know that are born in Michigan, so I cannot talk bad about Michigan. I couldn't talk bad about them if I wanted to because I don't know anything about Michigan. I've been there. That's about the extent of it. But what I know in the South is family means something. And why can we not understand and relate that into our spiritual lives and how we treat other people? What if you treated everybody you saw like family? This is your moment to talk just for a second, and then we're going to move forward. I got to drink some coffee. I'm a little tuned up right now. And Miss Pam, if I insulted you, please don't take it that way. I didn't tell him it was really you talking about your husband. You're trying to get rid of him, didn't know how. I'm kidding, Kelly. I'm glad they're here with us, and I've told you before, one of the darkest moments I've had in the last year and a half, Kelly was nice to me. He didn't know it, but he was, and I won't ever forget that because I needed somebody to be nice to me. And all he did was offer me a seat, but still it was nice, and I won't ever forget it. Come on now, talk to me. Thank you so much for saying that. I'm glad you said that. Because one of the things we need to do a whole lot more of in the church is be more confrontational. Now, I'm not talking about taking the Bible and slapping people in the teeth with it. Boy, well, the Bible says, let go. I'm talking about if we love people, do we confront them or we let them walk around? The hardest part about that discussion with my cousin today was, you can't avoid this. Avoiding it is not going to make it go away. But how many of us in here, like you said, sometimes we treat family harder. How many of us in here would never avoid a conversation with someone in our family? Right? But would definitely avoid it outside of that because that's just, it's a little too complicated. A little too complicated. I know I've talked a lot about family. I'm going to give one more, then we're moving on here, okay? I'm going to move on. Before Ann Reed and I ever got married, we sat down with Roy Sharp to have premarital counseling. And I don't know if you've ever heard Roy Sharp preach or not. This is one of my favorite humans in the world. But when he starts preaching three or four words in, I'm usually asleep. Okay, that's just the truth. You can judge me. Go ahead and throw all the stones you want to throw. He's not the most interesting pulpit minister I've ever met, but I love this man because I knew how he lived his life. I know how he did all that kind of stuff. Premarital counseling, Anna Reed and I could not have chosen better. I lie not, by the second session, he had already picked out one of the largest problems we was going to have in our marriage, and we had no clue. We hadn't even really gone through and met all of this situation, but by the second counseling session, he already had nailed down, laughingly, what one of our biggest problems in our family was going to be. And you know what it was? If I've not told you, you could probably guess. It's our families. Her family and my family are not the same. And it was going to be like this whole culture clashing together. And, of course, I was a young man who knew everything. Like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. It wasn't 2 months after that. So I take Anna Reed to a mac and ali meal. And she sits down at this meal, and everybody at the table is talking at the same time. And ain't nobody mad about it. If you got something to say, say it. Don't be getting mad because people are talking. Talk, right? And then before you know it, somebody's got up left. Somebody else has got up left. Where are they going? Well, they're done eating. I don't know where they're going, but they're through at the table, right? And then I take this 2 months forward to my first experience in the Wilson household. They got plates for plates. I ain't ever seen nothing like that before in my life. They've got a plate that you put your plate in, right? I get yelled at for sitting in a woman's chair. That's a woman's chair. I hate to ask, but how do you tell if it's a woman or man chair? I got in trouble for not putting my drink on a coaster. And I thought to myself at that moment, like, why would you buy a table if you can't set stuff on it? Now, laugh it up. Go on, laugh it up. Every one of you, I'm okay with it. But I want you to know you can see this huge... They made me sit at this table until everyone got through eating. If you've ever eaten with me, if you've ever had the joy of going out and eat with me, let me tell you how it's going to go. I don't care if I've invited you to eat with me at the Mexican restaurant. I'm going to be there until I'm done eating. And then guess what's going to happen? I'm out. It has nothing to do with you, but I'm done eating. Why would I sit here any longer? So I have to sit at this table until everyone's done eating. Only one person can talk at a time. I'm just swishing my neck back and forth. Boy, I'm done yet. So now I hope you understand why they don't like me. And I'm okay with that. They love me and they accept me and they think I'm a good man. And I love them and think they're good people. But it's just, we have a difficult time. Having said all of that, but we're still family. And if someone talked bad about my father-in-law, I want y'all to know I'd be the first in line. But you know how often that man reads his Bible? You know how often he prays for people? And I'm not talking about praise. You know how often he prays for you? And he knows you don't lie. I mean, I would be ready to go to war because I know how good of a man he is, you know? He's my family. You know that. And I think what we need to spend a little more time sometimes is sometimes we need somebody to step in and mediate and tell us that we're going to have issues. And sometimes we need to step into our own family members and tell them, you've got issues. You got issues. I've got to quit. Look what y'all done. Yeah, I've talked too much tonight. And I really appreciate what you said. Let me move forward a little bit. The last one is the idea of forgiving one another. I cannot tell you how much it breaks my heart when I find someone in the world that has a family member that they have not forgiven or can't forgive or can't do all of this. And some of the stories are horrific. I'll be honest. I go, my doctor's Dr. Busby. He's the only doctor I know in town. I know lots of nurse practitioners, but I don't know any doctors other than Dr. Busby. And he's an internal medicine doctor. And I thought, well, all my problems are internal, so maybe he'll be able to take care of it. All that means is he won't see anybody that's not 14 years of age. But I didn't know that when I first went. I thought, he's internal. Good. I got internal problems. But there's a nurse in his office that hasn't spoken to her two brothers since her mother died. And every time I go in there, I ask her about it. Now, she looks at me like I'm some caring and compassionate individual, right? And I'm not. I wish I were more a caring and compassionate individual. But she has struck something deep within me because her family's not right. They're not right. And I want that to be right. I can't tell you how many times someone dies and people get crazy over nothing. And it didn't have to be rich. Oh, if it's rich, that complicates things. And if you have any money, listen to me well. Please, for the love of all that's holy, draw it out in pen and paper so that your family won't have an option to fight when you die, okay? You get this, shut up. You get this, shut up. You get this, shut up. Put it on paper and let it go, okay? You know, I joke all the time about who's the favorite with my mama, me or my brother, and it's my brother. I always say that or whatever. But when my mama dies, what I've seen that play out in the world as, people go crazy. People go crazy. It is not worth it. You got to be family. And I think about, why can't we forgive when we know how much we are forgiven? And the greatest parable you know that's told about that is the man who was forgiven a debt that he could never repay and then went out on the street and found a man that owed him a nickel and threw him in debtor's prison. Don't ever be that person. If you want to overcome the bad things in life, all you've got to add to your own life is kindness, compassion, and forgiveness. And we've got to stop. And some of you, by the way, on the mirror thing I'm still tore up about, some of you were laughing too hard because you've done those same things. You've looked into a mirror long enough, like, who am I looking at? So next time, somebody has to confess.